5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Workin' Sports Podcast. I've long held this belief that if you are a sports fan, you should work in sports. I know, revolutionary, crazy thesis here, but hear me out. All the people out there who are accountants or administrators, human resources reps, sales account executives, marketing coordinators, all of these jobs exist in the sports industry. So rather than selling tires, why not sell tickets? Rather than marketing the world's largest concrete museum, why not market sports events? Analyze spreadsheets for some e-commerce site or analyze game film. Community relations for JP Morgan Chase or community relations for the Toronto Blue Jays. Just about every job in the business world can be done in the sports world. They are simpatico. So I sit back and wonder sometimes, it took me a moment in my career to say, in my college years, I'd say, hey, why don't I do this thing that I like and do it in sports, which I really like? This idea of go to work and then go home and enjoy sports, well, why not mesh the two? Now, there are also the glamour jobs in sports as well. You know, we talked about some of the business-oriented jobs, like I just listed off, but there are glamour jobs too. Sports anchor, coach, scout, general manager, agent. These are jobs that are very unique to the sports industry and require special focus and talent. Let's hone in on that last one, agent. Since Jerry Maguire, the idea of becoming an agent has grown massively in popularity. There are about 830 agents certified by the NFL Players Association. And then there are MLB agents, there are NHL agents, there are all types of agents. And when you think about it, so many people tell me they want to be a GM, and there might be 30 of those in the league, but there are a lot more agents. Now, let's break that down a little further, though. In the NFLPA, there are 830 agents, which means there's more than one agent for every three players in or around the league. And then even further, roughly 75% of NFL players are represented by just 17% of all certified agents. That's according to some statistics by the NFLPA. Now, think about that. 75% of the NFL players are represented by a small group of agents, the super agents. These super agents rep about 75% of the NFL, and then the rest battle it out for who's left. Guys like Tom Condon, who represents Drew Brees and Eli Manning, J.J. Watt and Matthew Stafford, amongst others, he accounts for $1.4 billion in contracts alone. That is insane. But that doesn't mean the business is closed out for people trying to break in. These super agents don't work alone. They have huge agencies and support teams and people on staff. There are undrafted free agents or late-round draft picks. Guys like Super Bowl hero, Patriots Super Bowl hero Malcolm Butler. He's represented by little-known Derek Simpson. He's not Drew Rosenhaus. He's Derek Simpson. There are ways to make a name for yourself in this side of the industry if you truly want it. But how? What is the answer? How should you learn? What should you learn? What do you focus in on? How do you land clients? Well, I have just the person to answer that for you. Jack Mills from Capital Sports Advisors. Don't know Jack? Well, you should. He's the agent for number one overall pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, Baker Mayfield. Have you heard of him? You should. When Tom Condon and Drew Rosenhaus and Jimmy Sexton, the super agents we talked about before, came knocking on Baker's door, it was Jack who stole the show. Now, Jack's been around the block for more than a few times. He represented four first-round picks in the 1970 draft. It was a different world back then, but he's still going strong today. He's represented Eric Dickerson, Tony Boselli, Rod Smith, and a bevy of other top-line, Pro Bowl, Hall of Fame-type players. And he's here to share it all with you. So let's get to it. Hey, Jack, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Thank you for agreeing to do this. You've had a really exciting season, I would say, having Baker Mayfield as one of your clients and third rounder Michael Gallup. I've always been curious. Over the years, it appears that agency and representation has consolidated into a few major big players. All the biggest and brightest seem to get represented by a handful of names or agencies. As someone like you with decades of experience, how do you cut through the huge competition out there to still land players like Baker Mayfield and like Michael Gallup? How do you go about doing that?
Well, it's not easy, as you can imagine. In Mayfield's case, I have had a long history at the University of Oklahoma. That's my school. I went there. I went to law school there. And I've had any number of players over the years that played at OU and then played in the NFL. And I think in that case, Mayfield's parents were just looking for a straight deal, and they had talked to some of my friends from OU days and some of my former clients, and I think that really is what opened the door for us. And they had decided up front that they did not want a big firm.
Okay.
So that also worked in our favor. Otherwise, if they said, you know, we want the big firm, then it would have been over pretty quick.
Why do you think certain people gravitate towards the big firm? And in Baker's situation, why do you think he gravitated against it?
Well, Baker is very much of an individual. He's very much his own person. He really has a mind of his own and doesn't just follow the leader. He is the leader. And I think that otherwise, I think some people are attracted to the big firm just because of the names that they have. You know, they want to be associated with some of the great players that the big firms have. And we had them over the years. In my history, I've had 46 first-rounders, but I haven't had that many in recent times. And so some of the names that would be familiar, like, you know, some past Heisman Trophy winners or something, wouldn't be that familiar to players coming out today.
Okay.
So I think that that's one of the reasons that players go for the big firms. They like the association with all the names that they can produce.
And for you personally, running a smaller firm, what do you think is the biggest advantage that you kind of bring to the table?
I just think it's a lot more personalized. We take a very strong personal interest in our clients, and we're very available to them. To me, it's a long-term relationship business. It's not a matter of just making a deal and moving on. It's a matter of establishing a relationship and being there through the years. A lot of my good friends today are people that I represented many years ago who are now way beyond their pro careers and are out in the business world or whatever they're doing. Some of them have even retired by now from what they were doing. But I just think it's a difference in the personal attention that we can provide.
You know, I think it's really interesting that a guy like Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo were represented by this, are still represented by the same agent, Don Yee. How would something like that work? I mean, how could an agent possibly do their fiduciary best by their client if another one of their clients is in competition for the same position on the same team? I mean, I just don't see how that can build trust right there.
That is a very tricky one, I'll have to admit. I think there's clearly a conflict when they're on the same team competing for the same position. I just think, though, that a client, in any type of conflict situation, a client pretty much needs to waive the conflict.
Okay.
I think you need to make it clear to them that this situation is going to happen. Now, for example, when I'm sure Garoppolo associated with Don Yee, he didn't know he was going to be on New England. At least
right.
I'd be surprised if he did.
Yeah.
So once the draft occurs, you may find yourself in a conflict that you didn't really anticipate. But I think if it's a situation where you take on a veteran that's in competition with another player on the same team, I think you owe it to your client, your existing client, to be made aware of that,
yeah,
and to put his stamp of approval on it. That's basically what you have to do as a real lawyer. So it can be a very, very delicate situation because we know that the competition is pretty intense, and in Garoppolo's case, you know, he's no longer with New England. It worked out fine.
Yeah.
And Don Yee, in my opinion, is a very ethical person. So I'm sure when Garoppolo got drafted there, it wasn't exactly what he had in mind to happen, but it did happen.
Yeah, I'm sure these conflicts come up sometimes. You don't even predict them happening, like you said. How would you personally describe, you've been in the industry for 40 years, how would you describe the art of being an agent? Would you consider it a relationship job, or is it more of a CBA knowledge and contract negotiation type of focus? How do you kind of describe it?
Well, I think it's all of that. To me, I've always often said, for people that think they want to get in this business, I tell them the first thing they need is a servant's mentality. So they've got to be willing to, take care of their client in whatever needs the client has. It's not all just negotiating contracts. There's a lot of other personal things that come into play. So to me, in many cases, you become that person's most trusted advisor. And so I think it's really, to me, if it's done properly, it develops into a very close relationship. And most of the time, that's up to the player.
Okay.
I mean, some guys want more of a relationship than others. So I pretty much leave it up to the client as to what they want me to do beyond the contract itself. But in most cases, it has developed over the years into good personal relationships that go way beyond just being the agent or the contract advisor role.
I imagine that's got to be one of the big differences between the large firms or the big name agents who represent, 100 or 200 players versus somebody like you who has a different philosophy, is that you're able to build those personal relationships and you're able to connect with the players on a different level. And I would think to some that's exactly what they would want and look for out of an agent, moving forward.
Agree. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That to me is the big difference between the big firm and the more boutique firm, the way we are. I just think, in spite of how much an agent may want to develop a personal relationship, if he's looking after 100 people,
yeah, he just can't.
He's just limited in what he can do. It's not a matter of desire or intent. It's just simply what do you have time for,
Exactly.
And to me, it's a matter of being available for the client, returning his phone calls promptly, getting back to him when he has a question or a problem. And because, when you're negotiating a 3 or 4 year contract, you're not going to be doing a contract again for a while. So a lot of things can come up in the meantime that are just what we call client maintenance.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So you refer to yourself as having a boutique firm, but I don't want to undersell it. You've represented some of the biggest names in the game, guys like Eric Dickerson and Tony Boselli and Rod Smith and Heisman Trophy winners. What are some of the biggest challenges you have faced managing some of these larger-than-life athletes as they progress through the league? I mean, you start out with them as really young men getting ready to enter the league, and then money comes in and different challenges and different endorsements. And how do those challenges change as you grow with the player?
Well, when the guys first come in the league, and depending on what their background is, but most of them have never had any money.
Right.
And it's a whole big new wide world that they're going into from college sports into the NFL. So it's just, there's a huge transition to be made. And so I think initially, you're just trying to prepare these guys for what's ahead. For, in college, there's a bunch of guys on scholarship. And so the first thing I tell them is there's no scholarships in pro sports. and there's going to be, for example, the NFL, there's going to be 90 guys when training camp starts, and there's going to be 53 when it's over. So some people that you may get close to are not going to be there. And so I think it's, if in a word, it's developing a business mentality about the sport. It's the first time I think they've had to think about it in business terms as opposed to something they've been doing all their life for fun and for pleasure and for the love of the game, so to speak. There's room for that at the pro level, but they need to start thinking about it as a business, or they're going to get disappointed in the way they get treated or in the result that they realize from it. And so so once they get further along in the sport, you know, after that first contract, they're much more sophisticated about what the game is about and about what's involved in the contract process, what free agency is about. They just have so much more knowledge and experience about the lifestyle and the nature of the business. So as they get older, your role changes. They don't demand as much. They're not as high maintenance. They may not depend on you for as much as they did when they first came in the league.
That makes sense. You seem like a very measured and calm and thoughtful person. When you go through the process of recruiting a new athlete and you land somebody like Baker Mayfield, who you know has a chance at being a number one overall pick, do you have a moment where you celebrate, or do you just immediately start thinking of what's next on the to-do list?
Well, a little of both. I mean, you're certainly going to have a little bit of private celebration. In my case, you know, my son is my partner. And it was a very satisfying thing for us to get a client of this magnitude. And so we're naturally going to be happy and enjoy the fact of being at that level. But from there on, you really don't have a lot of time to think about it, because stuff starts happening immediately for a player that is going to be looked at that high. There's teams calling all the time about this or that, and they may want interviews, they want workouts, there's the combine to deal with, there's the on-campus workouts to deal with, and then, of course, leading up to the draft, I think Baker had like 7 or 8 trips he took for private interviews with the different teams that were showing a lot of interest. So, yeah, it's a little bit of both. When you've been through this a number of times, you really kind of know what the drill is going to be. And so you kind of prepare him for that, give him a schedule of what to expect. And so it's just, like I say, it's a little of both. It's a little bit of enjoying the process and also getting right to work with what you need to do.
You and I were connected by a mutual friend, Zach Gross, and I give Zach a lot of credit. You were a panelist at the Sports Management Worldwide NFL Combine Career Conference, and he identified you. He was in the crowd. He identified you as someone he wanted to meet. He struck up a conversation. He's built a relationship with you since. How vital is it to be that personality type, the aggressive, fearless, talk to anyone type, to be a successful agent? Now, you don't necessarily sound that way, and yet you always have this, you have this vision of agents as being aggressive and having this fearless attitude. How important do you think that is?
Well, I taught sports law for many years at the University of Colorado Law School for about 20 years. And the very first thing I told people in the classes was that if they wanted to have a career in the sports industry, that they couldn't know too many people. And so I encourage them to start meeting people, to attend conferences like the Sports Lawyers Conference that we just had in D.C. last week, or go to the thing that Zach went to in Indianapolis, the Worldwide Sports
the Combine
seminar
Career Conference
that they had, and you just really you just never know. And I've always pretty much made myself available to young people to give them whatever direction or whatever guidance or counseling I could give them, because it is a tough industry to break into. So you've got to be very patient. You've got to persevere, and you've got to handle some rejection, because you're not just going to walk out and get the dream job, or start representing number one draft choices. It's probably going to take a few years to develop a practice to where you can get where you want to be. So I don't know if it's a matter of being aggressive as it is being persistent.
Okay.
And not getting discouraged to where you're going to be disappointed and quit before you have a chance to allow it to develop.
Yeah, I've always wondered that. Is it even possible nowadays for someone to become an agent and kind of work their way up by representing undrafted free agents and seventh rounders? Or would you say somebody trying to get into it initially is better off trying to sign on with one of those bigger firms and kind of learn the industry from the inside out in a way? What do you think?
Well, I think ideally, if you could get on with one of the bigger firms, that would be ideal. There would be more of a training program, opportunity.
Yeah.
Just the way we are with three agents here in one location, they might learn something from us, but we wouldn't have the structure, you might say, or the organization to give them the benefit of the experience that they would get from a bigger firm, mm-hmm. to where there's more clients, to where there's maybe more going on year round. For example, some of the bigger firms would probably do marketing in house, and we don't do that. So, to me, the ideal thing would be to get an internship with a big firm or the Players Association.
Yeah.
And then use that to roll into your own practice, or maybe to get in with a smaller firm, because one thing about a smaller firm, they would rather not have to spend time training someone in the business.
You're right.
And I think that's true with the leagues and everything. For example, attorneys coming into the league and to the Players Association are probably coming in with quite a bit of experience. They're not coming in right out of law school. And so, to me, it's and you may want to stay with a big firm. It may develop into a long-term opportunity. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that, because it could represent a lot of job security to be with a bigger firm.
Yep.
But at least to get started and to learn the business, experience sells, and resume experience is important when you're trying to find a job in this business.
For sure. So let's just pretend for a second. Let's say you were looking to expand and you were going to try to hire 10 new agents. If you were hiring a team of new people to work under you, what are the qualities that you would be looking for?
Well, let's put it this way. In this business, probably the most important thing you do is recruit new clients. And I don't mean, I would say beyond the representation itself. I've always felt that if you can attract new clients, you can learn to do the business. But you could be the most qualified, intelligent person and well-prepared in the collective bargaining agreement and all the contract information. And if you don't have a client, you don't have the opportunity to use that. And so I would be looking for people that are ethical, that are honest, that are willing to work hard, and ideally people that would be able to bring in new clients.
Right.
And to me, that is where the people skills, or you might say the sales ability, comes into play. And I don't mean doing anything dishonest in the recruiting process, but just people that have a way of getting to know people quickly and to get their trust. It's a close relationship.
Yeah.
You want to work with people that you like and that you have something in common with and that you think care about you. And so to me, to be a good recruiter or a good business developer, you need to have those qualities.
Does the same fit for the people that you want to represent? Like, as you've been in this business longer, are you choosier about who you want to work with because you do spend so much time servicing them and working with them? Do you, are you pickier at this point in your career, or are you willing to just, you know, go for the best possible opportunity for your business?
Well, I would say that, you know, there's certain qualities that we look for. First of all, it's a two-way street. In other words, we want to get people that we like.
Yeah.
That people that we can have good conversation with, people that will listen to our advice. And so, you know, let's put it this way. It's like when teams are keeping players on that may have been trouble for them. If they're great players, you're willing to put up with more than if a player is not a great player and he's a very high maintenance guy that's always getting into trouble.
Yep.
You know, there's a business aspect to our side of it. And so there's you know, we have in our mind the kind of guys we like to work with. And normally our guys have turned out to be, for example, we've had a lot of offensive linemen.
Okay.
Offensive linemen by nature tend to be really nice guys.
That's true.
And I'm not saying other guys aren't, but they tend to be low maintenance, really guys that you really enjoy and appreciate what you do. Because you also like for guys to appreciate what you do. And so, they can be any position. It's not a position thing. It's more of a personality thing. I think that you like to fit, and mesh with your clients well because you want to enjoy what you're doing as well as provide the service.
Yeah, I read a quote from Bill Belichick recently where I think he said he was talking to Urban Meyer and said, at this point in my career, I want to coach players that I like to be around. And that just makes so much sense. Like, if you're going to be committed to this all year round as an agent or as a coach or as a whatever, you want to be around people you like being around. I mean, it just no time for the shenanigans that sometimes go on around certain people. You mentioned earlier that you got your law degree from the University of Oklahoma. Do you view that as an essential step to getting to effectively managing athletes, having your law degree, or can you be a top agent without it?
I think you can be a top agent without it. I believe, and in fact, I'm sure that the Players Association requires some type of graduate degree, and there are tons of master's programs out there now in sports administration and sports management.
Yep.
And I think, for example, the Arizona State has got a real nice one-year program. It's a master's, and it's a business/law type of master's that I think was. And there's others out there. I just happen to know that one pretty well. I think if you don't want to go to law school for 3 years, and not everybody does, I think some of those other master's programs prepare you just as well as law school does. It just, when I started out, there were very few people doing this. We're talking about late 60s.
Yeah.
And I already had my law degree. There was no particular career path that you could be pointing towards in those days because there was no way to become an agent, and there was also very little need because of the kind of compensation that pro athletes were making in the late 60s.
Right.
You know, and today it's totally different. You know, there's all this career track and career path that you can follow now. But I think a law degree is helpful, but to get back to your point, I don't think it's necessary to become a successful agent.
Okay, that's good advice. We'll finish up with this. You've been doing this for a long time. You mentioned you started in the late 60s. You've had some of the biggest names in sports under your purview. How much has the business of being an agent changed since you first started? And have you seen changes for the better, or do you think it's kind of worse or harder now than it was back then?
Well, I think starting out today, it would be quite a bit harder just because of the sheer number of people that are in the business or trying to be in the business. There's so much competition. There's so much being, I don't know what all is being offered, but to the top guys, there's a lot of financial incentives being offered. There's marketing guarantees. There's loans. There's stipends. We all have to be prepared to pay for the training expense. So you've got to have a little bit of capital to work with to get started to sign a quality prospect. So in the days when I started out, none of this. There was none of this. There was none of the personal training. There was none of the financial stuff being offered. I had four number ones in 1970.
Wow.
In the NFL, and they all started at, guess what, $25,000.
Oh, boy. Different world now.
$25,000 salaries.
That's crazy.
First year. And it was like 25, 27.5, 30, 32.5. That was like a four-year contract.
That's crazy.
So you wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of money getting a client for something that you're going to be able to get. Back in those days, the fees weren't regulated, but certainly if you were able to charge 3% on a $25,000 salary, that's $750. You wouldn't want to spend a whole lot to get that client. So basically what I was doing and what most people were doing back in those days were maintaining another type of business. In my case, I was being a regular attorney, and I was just doing it as part of my law practice. Today, people are, you know, like us, a lot of people are exclusively doing representation work, agent work,
yeah,
for their sole practice.
The economics of four first-round draft picks in 2018 versus 1970 is just jaw-dropping, isn't it? I mean, staggering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's just like, well, light years, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a totally different world. And like I said, there's more people are doing it. So, and there's a lot of fee cutting. You know, the union allows us to charge 3%. But when you're talking about top guys, I don't think very many people are getting 3%.
Okay.
So, you know, that cuts the margins get a little thin.
Yep.
Until a guy gets to that second contract.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That second free agent yeah, it makes perfect mm-hmm. sense. Well, Jack, it's been a real honor to speak with you and to learn from somebody with your level of expertise. I know our audience is going to be very excited to hear this and your insight into what it's like being on the front lines of NFL representation. So good luck with Baker Mayfield and all your other clients this year. We'll be watching and keeping in touch on everything.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed doing it.
Jack Mills was just on our little podcast. That's insane. I'll be honest, I've never been more nervous for an interview. For one, Jack is, you probably could tell this from the interview, he's thoughtful and speaks with a natural power and pace. I tend to talk fast and blurt out thoughts as they pop into my head. So you probably noticed I was consciously trying to alter my pace and be calmer more than normal and just really try to be more thoughtful and slower rather than getting all fired up and excited and blurting out questions, because that's what I normally do. I need to thank Zach Gross for setting this up. Zach is an aspiring agent, a fan of our podcast, a recent MBA graduate, and a hell of a guy. As I mentioned in the interview, he met Jack at the Sports Management Worldwide NFL Combine Career Conference, and he didn't just say hi and walk away or just ask one question and then be done with it. He built a relationship with him to the point they were texting each other the night of the NFL draft. Nice work, Zach, and thank you. Keep being fearless. That's it for this week. If you have questions you want answered, email me at podcast@workinsports.com. Join our private Facebook group by searching for the Work in Sports Podcast on Facebook. And subscribe to this year's podcast. I love having you all around. It makes it a lot more fun to get our guests and to do these interviews when I know there's people out there listening. So subscribe, share it with friends, and let's keep building this thing into a huge podcast. See you guys.